Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. He's Scott Manzi. I'm Alex Turco, and I really mean welcome back. We had a week-long hiatus. It seems like we haven't recorded in ages. I'm out of quarantine. I'm back in the office. A lot of current events going on, obviously, and the world just seems different than it did 2 weeks ago.
No doubt.
Last time we talked, it was, oh, we want sports back. Look what's happened since. I missed you, man.
I know. It has been, as you said, probably a year's worth of developments, both sports-wise and non-sports-wise, in the span of a week and a half. And so with that, I mean, here we are. We are back. And of course, right on cue, we're not doing a normal show. We have a kind of a special show, which we had originally planned for you, but we decided to hold it off last week. Just felt like the time wasn't right for the interview. We had recorded ahead of time, kind of the tone of it and everything. It was lighthearted and kind of fun and free, and we think you're going to enjoy
and
it.
And that's what we do. You know,
that's
our niche, if you will. This whole thing started when we were sitting on a couch drunk one day and said, let's record.
Right, exactly.
And that's a true story on the inception of this Sports War podcast. And thankfully, no one has ever found those recordings except for you. I haven't heard them since, but they were pretty rough.
They're a little loose to say the least.
We were way too loose, but that's our game, man. We're having fun. We've been buddies since we both were in middle school. You might have just been an eighth grader. So that's what we do. We sit down, we have a couple beers, we talk sports, we have fun, we joke. I cuss sometimes. And it just wasn't the time for that last week.
No. We don't pretend to have some big platform where we can bring on a bunch of high-level guests and affect change. We just do this for kind of our buddies and a few others that listen that want to have a good time. And so there are a lot of good interviews out there that were done with a variety of people. If you haven't paid attention to what Marvin Wilson of Florida State, what he was able to do with the Noles in the last week, really inspirational story. What a guy, what a leader. Maybe my favorite Florida State Seminole right now, based off of what he was able to do. The PMT guys, I thought, had some good interviews with both Booger McFarland and Arian Foster last week. I mean, there's a lot of different other places where you can get that kind of stuff. And I encourage people to check all sorts of different interviews out and learn and open your eyes and your ears. But for us, you know, we are who we are, and we're not going to pretend to be anything different. We're two white guys drinking beer, talking sports on a couch. And so we decided to go ahead and let things breathe a little bit. And now we're going to get back to somewhat regularly scheduled programming. As I mentioned, we have a great interview coming up, Alex, and we recorded it about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks ago now. And it was something that we didn't anticipate going in the direction it did. It ended up being, I think, even better than we anticipated it would be.
Well, it turned into, I mean, of course, due to coronavirus, we can't sit down next to the guy. And he lives in Miami. But aside from that, you know, for being on a Zoom call, talking about a fun interview, I felt like I could sit there and say, hold on one second, let me go grab another beer because I'm having a hell of a time with you. Let's keep this thing going, as opposed to just being a stiff interview where it's dry, it's white and black, it's, hey, what's the answer to the question, yes or no, and that's it. We had a hell of a time with him. We talked about a little bit of everything, and I can't wait to – I got to go back and listen to it because now it's been 2 weeks.
Right.
And I had so much fun doing
it. I've been holding the file from you.
I know. You have. You have no
leaks
over here. I know. I need a leak. I need a rat in the Scott Manzi Media Center.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it has been pretty impenetrable here over the course of the last several months, so good luck.
Especially since we've had all this rain. San Marcos essentially flooded off, so you have a little moat
around. Yeah, no doubt, man. I snuck in a little outside activity today as we're recording this on a Monday evening, in between torrential rainstorms. And I woke up to it, happened in the middle of the day, happened in the evening, right around dinner time. Actually ended up with a nice sunset, but oh my goodness. I mean, side note before we get to this interview, the days like today are like I was saying to somebody earlier, these are the days in which I could just pack up and move somewhere else, anywhere else. Like Florida, Northeast Florida, this time, like a day like today, like we're talking eighth layer of hell, eighth circle of hell here. Like the 90 degree weather with 1,000,000% humidity. And
oh, yeah.
You don't know if it's going to be sunny or pouring down rain 1 minute to the next. I mean, just a bad weather day.
In my office, I'm behind a wall. I turn the corner and it's sunny. I'm like, oh shit, look at this. I go on my lunch break. It's sunny. I drive there. About an hour later, I'm back, obviously. Sit down, go to the bathroom, and it looks like the color of my shirt. It's black as night outside. I'm like, what the hell just happened to the sun? It's typical Florida weather, though.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It makes it to where I love spring. I love spring in Florida, Northeast Florida. Best season by far. And I think we've officially hit the point where that is a – got to wait till next year to get to spring. Oh, we are officially in 100% summer. Got our first tropical depression.
We had a long spring this year, so you can't
We did. Yeah. We needed it, and we took advantage of it, I think. But we had our first tropical system move through over the weekend. It has rained for like 4 days in a row, and it's – rain in the forecast for the next like 4 days too, and not just rain, like not just like that that old classic Florida afternoon thunderstorm and like all right, like that's it. No, like we're talking like 3-4 times a day of cats and dogs. Like it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is crazy. But Scott, let's I'm gonna go ahead and let you intro this, but before I do so, I'm excited for next week too. I'm happy we're back this year. I mean, I'm sorry, this year. I'm so happy we're back this week because I've just been dying without it. Want to drink a little beer, talk sports as kind of a release from everything else. We wanted sports before all of the George Floyd riots, before all of these movements. And
before
now more than ever, now before what? Coronavirus?
Before coronavirus took them away.
Which seems forever ago now, too. Yeah, which, you know. God, that's a whole nother story. I just can't wait. And we have true light at the end of the tunnel. We've been saying that for a long time, but the sun has broken through the wall. We have plenty to see. But before we break down a little bit of that, which we'll do in the coming weeks, that we have time with the NBA playoffs and things coming up, and we'll touch on that on the other side of this interview. But Scott, we had a little special teams guy on here for you, a kicker.
I know. Just talked about a tropical system, so it's appropriate that we have a hurricane on here for this guest. And yeah, a punter. Wouldn't you know it? A special teams guy. It all kind of started off as a joke with me being a former.
Well, let's clarify. I knew you were about to. You being the joke, not him.
Yes, yes. No, me being the
joke.
You
are not a joke, but you were our punchline in order to reel him in.
Yes, yes. Being the butt of the joke about being a former not-so-special teamer. And
backup.
It worked. We landed the interview, but Brian Monroe is our guest. He former punter for the University of Miami in the early 2000s. He played with a lot of big name guys, and you're going to hear from that too. He talks about some of those stories. He now works in sports talk radio.
I love when he casually drops names.
It was great.
Oh yeah, yeah. John Vilma. Oh, John Beeson. Antrell Roll. Just dropping names that you know. You and I grew up saying these are college football greats and NFL studs. I mean, actual veterans of the game in the NFL to where they're going down not just in Miami Hurricanes lore and history. These are NFL guys that every market, all 32 markets, know these names. They didn't have to play for your team to say, yeah, Jonathan Vilma, that guy was a badass.
And he's got plenty of stories about those guys and plenty more. And so we'll hope you enjoy this, our interview with former Miami Hurricanes punter Brian Monroe. Joined now by former University of Miami punter Brian Monroe, was there from 2003 to 2006. Now you can hear him on the airwaves down in South Florida. Canes football alum who stayed in the area. He does work as an analyst for 790 The Ticket and 560 WQAM. Brian Monroe, thanks for joining us here on the Sports Bar Podcast.
What's up, fellas? I can't crack a beer right now because I'm a whiskey guy, so I'll just cheers my glass of whiskey to you cracking open that beer.
That works. That
works. That's one step above us. So honestly, if anything, now we're in your shadow.
You know what's funny is I never got into beer. Like, I've tried all different types of beer, and it just wasn't for me. Like, I'd rather have a glass of whiskey. I'll do vodka. I'll do different things. But beer, just, it was never for me.
So that's a taste thing,
right? What are you drinking?
So what whiskey? I'm a Crown Royal guy.
Okay.
I'm drinking a little XR right now because I want to bet. So I got the finest of the crowns right now from football season. Football season did me well this year when it came to betting bottles. I think I won 8 this year.
Boy, you did better than Alex did. He's our running gambler on this program. He's got a trifecta he does every week on college football. I don't think he would have won any bottles, would you have?
Well, no, Scott, I got hot near the end. I will admit, Brian, I was cold as ice in the beginning and then kind of picked it up down the stretch. But yeah, I mean, betting bottles might be a better idea than what, I mean, that's $40, $50 a pop. Good for you there.
Yeah, you know, I don't like to me, money, okay, it's cool. I guess if I'm betting Vegas and stuff like that, that's cool. But like friends of mine, people that I know or that I work with, it's like, look, I'm not going to take your money, but a bottle is cool. It's easy. Like if you want to buy a $25 bottle, cool. You want to bet big bottles, we can do that as well. So we have some Jets fans that work at the station, and then I also have some Dolphins fans that I'm cool with. So those are two fan bases a lot of time that overachieve in preseason as far as predictions. So I'll take them up on those bets. So the Jets and the Dolphins, I did well this year with them.
Yeah, that's easy money then.
I'm telling you. And then, you know, obviously I have to follow the Dolphins and stuff like that. But again, I try to be objective when I look at the teams. It's not like I'm saying I hate to see them. No, I'm looking at the roster, I'm looking at the division, I'm looking at your schedule, and there's no way you guys can go 10 wins, 8 wins. There's no way. No. Yeah.
And that then homework, certainly helps.
Talk cocky. So talk cocky will get you in the hole with some bottles of me. So
yeah, you know? That way you're loaded up with them for a random podcast appearance with the Sports Bar Podcast to fill
That's it
up it. On ice or neat, however you drink them.
Crown XR, I mean, is going to be on neat. The rest of them, I might mix up with some stuff, but Crown XR definitely has to be neat.
This guy's a professional.
Yeah, he knows what he's talking about. Speaking of professional, I just want to get it. Like, you had a little taste of pro ball, right? I mean, you got a chance in the league with the Chargers for a period of time?
I got a chance. I got a sniff. You know, I got to put on the jersey for preseason and stuff like that and bounce around for some workouts with the Denver Broncos, the Giants. It was with the Chargers, like you mentioned, for a stint, and then I went up to CFL.
What's it like when you're just living the workout life? Are you just like flying in? You're out there. How many kicks do you get to try and prove yourself? And how long does it take to get a call back?
So if it's just a workout or like a game, like the Denver Broncos called us in probably the second to last game of the year. They brought in 6 guys, and you go 2x2 because at the time it was late December, and I believe the workout was 2 degrees out. And the field was just surrounded by snow. Like, they cleared off the snow for you, but the field surrounding it was just literally 4 feet of snow around us. And everybody else stayed inside the dome, but they wanted you to kick outside for obvious reasons. And, you know, it's funny. You see the same faces when you go to these workouts. It's normally like 3 or 4 of the guys that you know. And a lot of times coaches already know who they want in mind. They saw this guy in preseason, or they saw him in a camp where they like dual practices with players and coaches. And the guy that they wanted, they had already seen. They just wanted to see if he would, you know, rise to the occasion. And to me that day, he wasn't the best punter. I thought there was another guy that was better than him. And I asked him straight up, you know, like, what was the reason? They're like, oh, we saw him. We just wanted to see if he could get in this competition and win it. So, you know, as far as the workout life or the tryout life, yeah, it's not fun. I mean, because you got to have a job that you're able to say, hey, I need to go to Denver tomorrow. Is that okay? Cool. You know, and like you're not stable, right? Everybody wants to be stable as far as a job to, you know, buy a house or buy a condo, you know, actually have stable bills and stuff like that. So
yeah. You're
not stable, but you need to have a job that's understanding of you getting up and going. And that's why when I first got done.
Yeah. If you ended up getting that gig in Denver, you would have had to leave that job for a little bit, whatever you currently had, right?
Yeah, you got to leave. And then let's just say you – and then and for the Denver, that was only two games. So you would have went for Denver for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then you would have came back home until it was OTAs. So that's the lifestyle.
Man, that's a tough lifestyle.
It is, and that's why, you know, like – everyone always says, like, oh, well, this guy's in the 8 years, 10 years. I'm like, yeah, majority of guys last 2 years, 1 year, 3 years. You don't make, like, significant money. You get money, and it's nice, but you don't make, like, this life-changing money that a lot of people think. That's why it's great to get your education, your degree, and it's great to have a plan set up after football and what do you want to do after football, because 9 times out of 10 for those football players, you're not going to make that money that's going to change your life.
Well, how did you start punting? Like, I feel like, I don't know about you, but me, I thought I was going to be an All-American quarterback when I was about 10, and then I realized I couldn't throw a ball very far, so I switched to becoming an All-American receiver until I was about 13, and I realized I couldn't run very fast, so I was like, maybe I could try kicking, and so I kind of picked it up, and then
lo and behold, he was the backup.
Yeah, I was decent enough to make the team. But how'd you get your career started in that regard?
So actually, I was a soccer player my whole entire life. Never played Pop Warner football. Never really was into football because I was born in the Bahamas. My mom was born in Ireland. So none of my family background actually has American blood, American sport, like a lot of my teammates. Pop Warner, you know, their favorite team growing up was the 49ers, and they watched this college. Like, I had none of that. I never really got into that until I actually started getting recruited. When I went to high school, my sister's softball coach knew me as a soccer player that was pretty good and kick a ball the whole field, the whole 9 yards. Told the coach in varsity football, hey, you got this soccer player coming in. You should go take a look at him. So the coach one day came to the PE class. Who's Brian Monroe? I'm like, damn, I'm in trouble already, and it's not even freshman year. So he's like, bring your cleats tomorrow. We got to work out. So brought my cleats, go to the field. I'm looking at this football like, man, I have never kicked one of these in my life. Didn't know what to do.
You had never kicked a football before freshman year?
Never. Only soccer ball ever in my life. I would say the most I ever threw a football was like soccer parties on the beach, and that's it. And, you know, you probably had the Nerf ball and a real ball, too. Yeah. But never like a real football, ever. And, you know, I go through the workout, and he's like, all right, cool, you're on varsity. I was like, what? I'm on what? I said, first of all, you got to talk to my mom. You know, my mom, she thinks football is this, you know, aggressive, nasty sport that it hit. You know, she comes from Ireland. She doesn't know any difference. She never watched American football. So I told him, I said, listen, you got to talk to my mom. You got to convince this little redhead lady that you're going to let me play this sport that she knows nothing about. And sure enough, he's telling my mom, listen, he's a kicker. He's not going to get hit. He's not going to get touched. I swear. So they let me do it. And I remember the first day being in the locker room trying to put this belt through my, like, pants. And I'm looking at this thing like, yo, where are, like, the holes and stuff like that?
Yeah.
It was the worst. It literally was the worst. I looked so awkward with, like, the pads on and the helmet. Like, I'm so used to soccer. Like, put on the jersey. Let's go.
Right, right. Yeah, some shin guards and we're set.
That's it. Shin guards, cleats. I'm ready to go. I do my little tape so I look good and stuff like that on my cleats and everything. But football? Nah, I knew nothing about that. And, you know, freshman year was hilarious when I look back on it. My high school coach still tells me he has the cassette tape. The VHS tape.
Yep.
To laugh about because, I wasn't very good at all, in my opinion. And then sophomore year, I started to get a little decent at it. Then a kicking coach noticed me at a camp. And he was like, oh, I would love to work with you. I got some guys in South Florida and another guy in North Florida that I think we can do some good things. And actually, we all turned out to go D1 in the same year. And one of them actually is I was competing with for Florida State, Miami, and that was Eric Wilbur that ended up being the punter at Florida.
Yeah, that's right. Huge leg.
Yep. And then the other two guys was C.J. Kogel. He ended up at UMass. He was at Deerfield Beach. And then Jay Octavia, who was from St. Thomas Aquinas, he ended up at Stanford.
Wow.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so.
Man, yeah, that coach, that guy that pulled you aside deserves a raise. He's 4 for 4 there.
He did good in that year. He did good in that year. And then, junior year is where it kind of blew up as far as recruiting-wise. Had a really good year. And then, coaches started coming by and then offers started coming in. So that's when I really started to actually pay attention to football, probably my sophomore year.
So let me ask, you mentioned recruiting. How do you get noticed initially? Because here's a total guess of me. Tell me if I'm on track or not. But I'm assuming you had a good running back or something on the team or a good lineman, and they came and watched him, and they're like, oh, well, shit, this guy actually can punt really well. Let's look at him too. Or how does it work for special teamers getting noticed and then getting noticed by the big dogs too?
So I think that does happen in certain situations, like a coach is scouting a certain player, then all of a sudden somebody else pops on film or at practice. And then your coaches also say, hey, we got a sophomore or junior you should look into as well, keep your eye on. But I think specialists, it's changed a little bit now, right? Because there's so much technology with the internet and all these different videos that coaches can click on.
But they still do that.
Exactly. But they still do what we did back in the day, and that's camps, right? So you got the Ray Guy camp was big when I was coming out.
Okay.
Chris Saylor was another big-time camp when I was coming out. And then you also went to the schools that you liked summer camp. So Miami, Florida State, Florida are all schools that I went camped at my going into my junior year and going into my senior year, because now you actually get one-on-one with the coaches face-to-face, and you actually kind of get to see the guys you're going against as well, because Eric Wilbur was at every single one of those camps that I was at. So you kind of battle your competition, see where you stand, but you get in faces of all the schools that you like.
So where did the process come down for you to make your eventual decision? How do you go Canes over Noles, Gators, and everybody else that wanted you?
So my final five came down to the big three in Florida and then Boston College and Ohio State. Ohio State was just, the weather wasn't for me. I'm a hot weather boy. I come from Bahamas, raised in Palm Beach, and, I was like, all right, yeah, you were my first offer. I love the coach, but it just wasn't.
Big transition, yeah.
Huge transition. Yep. And then Boston College, my mom loved the education up there. But again, the cold just wasn't for me. So I came down to Florida State, Miami. Eric Wilbur actually committed early to Florida. So that took them out of the running. And it came down to Florida State and Miami for me, going up to Florida State, checking out the campus, checking out the games, the atmosphere. I was lucky enough to go to one of the Florida State games as a recruit to see that tradition, the history, how electric the stadium was. But, a lot of it came down for me is, could I see myself living in the city? To me, Tallahassee is definitely a huge college town. That's what it is. It's party, bars, frats, the whole nine yards. It's a college town. When I came to Miami, it was different. You got like the city life. You have all the different cultures down here with the Europeans, the South American, the beach and everything. And I was definitely drawn towards that atmosphere.
Yeah.
Love the history. And then coming off of two national championships, I obviously helped a little bit. Fiesta Bowl, but it definitely helped. And, small classroom sizes was great. My mom loved that aspect of it. But I think I felt like the home vibe when I came down here interacting with the guys and stuff like that. It felt more like home.
So were you, I just thought about this when you said lost the Fiesta Bowl, which by the way, y'all were jobbed, absolutely jobbed. That was I'll give that any day of the week. Kane should have another national title ring. No doubt. That pass interference call is terrible, but as far as those two teams, were you committed to Miami already? Because you said Ohio State was a team you had already liked. You didn't necessarily have a team you loved growing up. Were you already diehard Cane mode by then?
So the funny thing is I actually committed to Miami at a bowl practice leading up to the Fiesta Bowl.
Wow.
Yeah, so my high school coach had told me, hey, Miami's going to invite you down for a practice, and they're most likely going to give you an offer. So I was like, oh, damn, that's pretty big. And
you jumped on it.
I came down, went to practice. Coach Coker talked to my mom and I in the office afterwards. And he was, how do you like it down here? And I was like, oh, it's great, coach. It's everything you guys mentioned and more. And he goes, well, would you like to be part of the family? My mom looked at him and goes, are you offering him a scholarship? He's like, of course. And I was like, all right, we're going to take that.
Yeah.
So it was it was awesome. And then, you know, you're watching the game with your Canes gear on. And I was actually watching at a friend's house that are huge Florida State fans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were really good friends of mine, but, you know, one of their brothers went to Florida State, and that's who their family loved. But, I mean, listen, with the area I grew up in was huge Florida State, huge Gators. That's just like Palm Beach, the areas that's the two schools most people root for in that area. Huh. So committing to Miami, I started to bring in a little more Miami, you know, flavor into high school, into the classrooms and stuff like that. But, you know, most of the times it's you're a Gator, you're a Knoll up there. I mean, tons of my friends went to Florida State, Florida, and UCF.
Yeah, our area is very – Scott, you can correct me if I'm wrong. We don't have a ton of Canes up here. And we're in Jacksonville, by the way, but almost all Gators and then a healthy dose of Seminoles like ourselves sprinkled in.
Some dogs.
Yeah, true.
I'll say definitely some dogs up there.
Yeah,
that's true. We definitely have some dogs up here. And and then they all come October when Florida plays Georgia here.
That's still a game I would love to just go tailgate at just because I hear crazy stories from my Gator friends.
The reason why it's called the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, not officially anymore, but it is still called that.
Man. I mean, I do like cocktails, so I definitely would get along.
Yeah, you'd be bringing a couple bottles of Crown for that because it's a hell of a time. Growing
for
up,
sure.
We always would. I mean, I'm obviously a huge Knoll. I'd go in a white shirt or a black shirt. Well, black was actually kind of Georgia-ish, but I would go in something very neutral and just go party the whole day. We had a blast.
Oh, for sure. You know, I'll give you guys a little, what's the word I want to say? I don't know. You can sprinkle it over my head, but first team I actually started watching when I was following football was Florida State.
All right.
Travis Minor and, you know, Peter Wark, obviously was one of the best receivers I've ever seen in college football.
Yeah.
Chris Winkie days. Yeah, they had a squad. I mean, they were beasts and stuff like that. And they were always on TV. So
that makes sense. Yeah.
Everyone was watching the Knolls in the late 90s. I mean, just they were another level. That's how good they were.
Well, I mean, Bobby Bowden said this multiple times. We'd have multiple additional rings, I guess you could say, if it wasn't for the damn Canes.
I think that goes vice versa. Yeah, I think it goes back and forth the same way because normally it comes down to all of us playing each other, right? And, you know, that hasn't been like that probably for like the last, I would say, I don't know, 10 years. But before that, it came down to a lot of times the big three that we would either, if that person won, they would go to the national championship or our rival knocked us out of the national championship race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so in the lead in here, you mentioned that Antonio Cromartie, Florida State Seminole grad, was in camp with you with the San Diego Chargers. And you said the Florida State guys and Miami guys kind of got along. I'll tell you from a fan's perspective, when the Canes play the Gators, I'm throwing the U up. I mean, I am a diehard Cane on that Saturday. I promise you, hand on the Bible, I'm doing all it, C-A-N-E-S, you name it, okay? But that doesn't mean I like the Canes. It just means that's a level of respect that on a fan base, I feel like we have, all of us, Knowles, Canes, the same. For some reason, I feel like we're brothers, you know. From a player standpoint, you obviously were one of the guys on the field, so you have a different perspective. But tell me a little bit about that relationship with the Big Three, because from a fan's point, the Canes are a team I love to hate. But, man, their rosters were awesome. The white helmet, you name it. They have an awesome tradition, but I don't feel that way about the Gators ever. I'll never root for the Gators.
Yeah, see, I won't go as far as to say I'm going to throw up the tomahawk chop when you guys are playing the Gators, but I'm definitely rooting for you guys when you play the Gators. Let's just say that. I don't know. It's different, right? You look at Florida State, and I feel like we have more mutual respect for each other on the field, right, is when it comes to the players. Like, whenever we're off the field, it's always cool. Right, like Antonio Cromartie, Florida guy. He went to Florida State, went to Miami, but went out there. We clicked. Cool, no big deal. Like, and I'd be running sprints and everything, you know, beating the rookies and stuff like that. And he's like, told y'all know about these Florida boys, man. We coming for y'all. And it's just that you kind of have that respect that we always keep throwing around because we always wanted to play each other, right? Florida State, you guys have your rivalry going. Miami, Florida State has been going, but Florida cut it off in the 90s against us. So I feel like a lot of times Miami fans lose respect for Florida when it comes to that. And then Florida State, a lot of guys play against each other in high school, right? You know, a lot of Florida State's done a great job recruiting Florida. So you normally see some of your boys and stuff like that. Like I remember my freshman year in high school, David Castillo, he played at my high school.
Okay.
And then he went to Florida State. So it's like you kind of have the respect. And then I became really good friends actually with Everett Brown, the defensive end for you guys. Nice and he player. Was teammates with – yeah, great player and even better dude. He became teammates with my good friend John Beeson, the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, that's right.
So always hanging out and stuff like that. And then I think Florida fans make it worse for their players because they talk all this trash and you're looking at them like, my man, like you take away a couple years and y'all are garbage.
Yeah.
Your best player couldn't sniff the NFL. I mean, like we could go on about the Gators, but it's just like, I feel like their fans make it worse. Right. Yeah. And you know, they come back and say, well, you guys have sucked for the last 10 years. I said, you know what we haven't done in the last 10 years? We never had a 4-win season, let alone 2 4-win seasons.
Right.
Like, again, which one makes you less relevant? You guys haven't won a championship in a decade. Only Florida State can say they've done that. You guys, you play in the SEC. Whoop-dee-doo. The SEC only has 3 really good teams that stay dominant. The rest of them, up and down. Tennessee's been garbage. Kentucky's been garbage. Auburn, they're finally scratching a little bit after Cam Newton. Yeah. Georgia, you know, now they got a new coach and stuff. They've been doing some stuff. Before that, they were a 9-win team, an 8-win team. Like, come on, man. Go give me that. So I feel like you just want to fight with them a little bit more because they're
About the DBU stuff? Their fan base.
Oh, God. Don't give me that. There's nowhere near DBU. No. Nowhere near DBU. I mean, if you want to say recent years of DBU, let's just say the last 10 years, you got to look at Ohio State and LSU.
No doubt.
Because when it comes to anybody claiming a DBU, DNU, tight end, whatever you want to say, it's not just what you do in college. That's not what it is. If you're a first-round pick, that you did in college. Right. Now, go be an all-pro. Go be a pro bowler. Go set some records and actually cement yourself as being the best. I don't care if you're a first-round pick and now you got cut by the team 2 years later, Vernon Hargraves. I'm just saying. But
I was going to drop his name. I'm glad you did.
I mean, it's funny because his dad actually was a coach at University of Miami when I was there.
Really?
Huh.
Yeah, Vernon Hargraves is his name, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And his nickname was Stud. Awesome dude. Awesome coach. But, yeah, like, to me, when you come to claiming any type of whatever, it needs to be college and it needs to be in the NFL. You can't claim something that you don't transition into the league, because all that means was you were a good college player, but you weren't elite, because now you can't compete with the big boys and actually hold your own.
Yeah.
So, like, that whole DBU, I'm sorry, Florida fans, y'all ain't got that. There ain't no way y'all are taking that title, because if I'm thinking in the most recent years, for me, I would say within the last, 8 years, 10 years, the best DB they had was Keanu Neal in the league. And he got injured. So it doesn't help. It doesn't help their cause, because if you're injured, doesn't mean you can sustain the greatness that you want to be. Now, I know Joe Hayden is in the league, but he's all right. He's not.
Yeah, he's okay. He's just he had like an elite 2 years in Cleveland and then fell off. He's still in Pittsburgh, obviously, but, you know, fell off quite a bit from being elite when you compare, like you said, Ohio State, LSU's top guys.
I mean, listen, LSU has produced some absolute studs. Patrick Peterson, the Honey Badger, Tre'Davious White with Buffalo. I mean, you're talking about all pros, first-round picks, third-round pick, and transitioning.
Jamal Adams, I mean, they're loaded.
Yeah, they can go on as well as Ohio State. I mean, they just had another first round, number 3 overall. They had Lattimore. They had Malik Hooker or Marcus Hooker.
Malcolm Jenkins.
They got tons of dudes. I mean, when it comes to claiming DBU, I'm sorry. You guys just aren't – you're just not – and then if you want to talk about all time, they'll probably be third in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Oh, yeah. I'd go Canes, Knowles. Yeah. Well, I guess –
I mean, Dion and Terrell Buckley, and
that's a top heavy for us, that is, the Noles, top heavy with Deion, Terrell, Buckley, Butler.
Leroy Butler.
Leroy Butler.
You can get into Corey Fuller.
It's tough to say that one because obviously Deion is the best cover corner, I think, to ever play the game.
Yeah.
So he definitely holds that weight. With us, we have Ed Reed, who obviously is one of the best safeties ever to step on the field.
Right.
Sean Taylor, rest in peace. If he lived longer, he would have been one of the same things.
No doubt.
we can go through the tradition of first round picks that actually became
Phillip Buchanan. He was there forever.
I mean, think about just that team. Phillip Buchanan on one side, Mike Rumpf on the other side, both yeah. first round picks. The backups to them was Kelly Jennings, first round picks of the Seahawks, had an 8-year career. The backup on the other side was Antrell Roll. He was a first-round pick and then became an all-pro at safety, won multiple Super Bowls with the Giants.
Monster. Yep.
And even third strings on that team, you had Sean Taylor was the backup on that team as a freshman as well in the secondary. So it's just a long line of great secondary play that does it translate into the league. That's how you get DBU.
Yeah. Totally. And let's get into that for a minute. You name all these guys. It's so funny to me thinking, golly, I remember Antrell Roll. What a freak. I mean, you were on the team with this guy, Vince Wilfork. You were on the team with him. Jonathan Vilma, you played with these guys. These are all-timers on a college football level. And then at the pro level, everyone knows their name. What's it like? It's kind of nice being a special teamer, I'm sure, because you get to sit back and truly appreciate these guys. While you're playing, you're only getting out there because your offense is, you know, you're not punting all the time. You actually get to sit back and watch these guys a good bit. What's it like in the locker room with those kind of alphas?
I mean, I think coming as a freshman, it was an eye-opening experience because you're not talking about like, oh, yeah, this dude's a college football player now. You're talking about like men. Like these dudes are already men. Like Vince Wilfork was – like that was a man walking in there. You're like, holy shit. Yeah. Like what? And no, you know, and then you also had, we had some of the best leaders to step on the field. And I think that's what separated those teams as far as 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003 is that you didn't need coaches. These guys coached themselves. You know, you had John Vilma, DJ Williams, they handled the linebackers. You had Sean Taylor, Antrell Roll, they handled the secondary. You had Vince Wilfork, Santonio Thomas, they handled the D linemen. You know, it's just tons and tons of guys that you just sit back and say, okay, what do they do to be great? What do I need to do as a freshman to earn some respect? And as a freshman, you just got to go ahead and grind. Show them like, hey, I'm in the weight room. I'm running the sprints with you, keeping up, passing you the whole nine yards. And that's really how you earn the respect. But I think the best part of being in a locker room like that is actually not even the game. It was practice. Because to see the one-on-one drills, to see the seven-on-seven drills, to see this defense that didn't even want to give up a touchdown in practice actually go at it and smash some of these dudes, you're like, wow, this is nuts. Because it was crazy. I mean, we had one-on-ones with Kellen Winslow going against John Vilma, Kellen Winslow going against Sean Taylor, Frank Gore, one-on-ones with DJ Williams coming out of the backfield. Like, it was absolutely nuts.
It's crazy. I mean, you're naming all these guys in matchups. I kid you not, as a fan, maybe it's because it's coronavirus and I'm so thirsty for sports. I really mean it when I would watch that. I'd pay to watch that, watch those practices. They sound like all-time matchups.
Oh, listen, every fan would pay to watch those practices because you get into it, right? Because this is your boy across from you, and I don't want you to have bragging rights in the locker because people are going to talk trash. So when it comes to one-on-ones, when it comes to full-on scrimmages, man, when I tell you our defense didn't want to give up one touchdown in practice, it was nuts. We had dudes getting knocked out cold wearing shells, which is just your helmet and just your shoulder pad, because our defense was that serious.
That intense, yeah.
But I don't care if you're a walk-on wide receiver. You're going to run this route, and you're about to get ran over. I was like, oh. Okay, well,
this is gonna be you fun. You were happy to be punting at that time.
Oh no, I played receiver. I played scout team all day.
Did you?
Oh hell yeah, that was fun.
Oh man, that's awesome.
I did a little bit of that back in the day.
The funny thing that people don't realize, Miami fans know it. I actually started playing receiver actually in practice, like for real, in my junior year, and then going into my senior year, I was actually on the two deep. On the depth chart, going into my senior year at receiver.
Is that why you switched to number 15?
No, I just wanted to change for my senior year. It's just that I don't know if you guys know. You remember C.J. Johnson, the receivers coach? He is the Saints receivers coach now. Okay. Been there probably now 10 years. We always had this game that we played before we would go on trips. It'd be the DBs versus the wide receivers. And since I played scout team wide receivers, one day the guys were like, "Yo, Monroe, come in. We're missing some dudes." So I started playing against them. And we're talking about going against Sean Taylor, Antro Roll, Kelly Jennings, Marcus Maxey, bunch of dudes. Yeah. And the first game that I played, they threw it up to me a couple of times, and I scored 2 touchdowns. Right?
All right.
So yeah. Scout team, you know, started catching some routes because I played receiver and DB my last year in high school. And CJ noticed it and was like, "Hey, why don't you come run some routes with me sometimes?" I was like, "You for real?" He's like, "Yeah, come run some routes." So I went on the side, ran some routes with him and stuff like that, and that's kind of how it happened. But I loved it because, you know, being a kicker, being a punter, sometimes you're off to the side. You're not with the team and stuff like that. And being able to actually, like, go up and practice one-on-ones, actually get to, like, fight and stuff like that, it was like you're a little bit more with the guys and, you know, you're battling. They can't look at you and be like, "Man, you didn't do nothing in practice today." And I'm, no, I'm bleeding. Like, I did a lot today in practice.
I have the same experience, minus the success in practice against these guys. Like, I would line up and run a route, but, like, I wasn't beating anybody to it.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it because I never knew, like, again, we talked about earlier, I never knew football and stuff like that, kickers aren't known as athletes. You know, they're known as, just a guy. When, you know, growing up, I was always – the athlete, right? I won all the awards in middle school. I traveled half a year playing soccer, ODP for the national team. Like, I thought I was going to play professional. So when I came to football, I was like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I do. Like, I have quick feet because of my soccer background. So, like, it's funny when people say, like, "Oh, kickers aren't athletes" and stuff like that. And I always bring up a story and I'm like, okay, so you know the 5-10-5 drill that everybody does. Right. So that's part of the combine. Stand in the middle, run 5 yards, go to the next 10 yards, 5. I was actually really good. That was actually one of the drills that I could kill it. Any ladders, cone drill, I'm really good at. There was literally only two dudes ever on my teams at Miami that beat me in that. No Devin Hester, no Antro Roll, only Sonoris Moss and Roscoe Parris.
Pretty fast guys too.
Well, yeah, those are quick cats. But man, so you were 3 in the running there on that drill every time.
Yeah, that was my drill. That's what I prided myself on. Like, I'm not gonna beat none of these dudes in a 40. I ran a 4.6, but my thing was agility drills. When it came to agility day, I would kill it. That was my drill. Like, I still have the punter record up there, up on the wall and stuff like that. But if you look at it, it's like, damn, a 3.89 for a kicker, that's pretty damn good right there. And people don't realize it until they see it, and they're like, "Damn, coach." And they're like, "Yeah, he got that."
You name all these names, and you don't have to be a Miami fan to know a lot of these names because of the success that many of them have gone on to have in the NFL. But you brought it up either at the beginning of the podcast or before we started recording, like how a lot of these guys still live in Miami. You're still friends with a lot of the guys you played with and that Cane community. How intense is it when you guys still get together? Does that competitive nature still flare up when you guys just get together for friendly times, whether that be going out or watching games or going to the beach or whatever?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, we're still all competitors, right? You know, we're not what we used to be, you know. A lot of my friends got kids and stuff like now, you know, so ain't nobody doing no sprints or anything like that. But when it comes to competing, I'm talking about card games. If we get on the basketball court just playing horse, anything, it's going to be a competition. And I think that's what makes it fun, right? Because you're still competing, you're still having a blast, you're with your boys. But yeah, definitely the competition level is up there. I would say it's up there. And then there's also the competition level when it comes to women in Miami, right? Because, you know, it's Miami's big, but it ain't that big. Right. And if we all like good looking women, then that means probably at some point I've talked to somebody you probably talked to. So it's always funny to see the reaction where you might be out with a group of guys and you're at the club or something like that. And they're talking to a girl and the girl looks at you and you're like, oh, hey, Brian, what's up? Oh, hey. And then he kind of looks like, wait, hold on.
He's how like, y'all know each it. Other? Yeah.
But, I mean, that's it's all in good fun, you know, and you have a blast with it. But I think that's one of the great things about University of Miami is that the brotherhood is very strong. And you're not talking about guys that you played with. You're talking about guys from the 80s, the 90s that are coming back, that are you're out together. You know, Jimmy Johnson holds a Canes football fishing tournament every year that everybody goes down to his house in the Keys. And you're talking about all the dudes from the 80s and the biggest names. And you're just like, this is crazy. Everyone's just kicking back, having some drinks, throwing out some lines.
I bet there's quite a cigar smoke cloud around that area. Knowing some of those players, and I mean, I always see them celebratory cigars, you name it. That's probably an awesome experience.
I think the best thing is the storytelling, right? Sure. Because now all the storytelling from the locker rooms, from the practices, or just being in the club doing something stupid, that comes back out now, and everyone's just clowning each other and stuff like that. So it is definitely a blast to get together, and we try to do it at least once a year that we have like a barbecue where everyone brings their kids or something, or if we're just going to have a guys day, we might take out one of the boats and stuff like that and just go have a blast.
Man, what's awesome. What's a good story that you can, that you feel good sharing from your Canes playing days? Cause I feel like there's a bit of a reputation from way back in the day about Miami football and some of the wildness that might've gone on.
Wildness down here? Nah. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Miami Vice.
You know, what is that? What is an innocent story that I can say? You know what? Okay, I'll give you the first time I ever went to South Beach, right? Okay. Because you hear about South Beach and you're like, man, I want to get down there, but I don't got an ID. I'm underage. Like, there's no way I'm getting into this club as a freshman and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of times freshmen, we stick around the Grove area or house parties and stuff like that. And I remember it was going into our sophomore year, Brian McKinney was back, and McKinney is – he's that dude. McKinney is like
– he's Mr. huge.
He's Mr. South Beach back in the day. And they were like, yeah, we're going to go to McKinney's condo or whatever. Cool, we show up, there's probably like 20 people there, 30 people at the condo. I'm like, damn, we're all going to the club? I'm like, there's no way we get into the club with this many people. So everybody gets in the cars, head to the club. Get to the club, and I see, like, people that I know outside the club. I'm like, oh, you waiting for? And they're like, oh, McKinney. I'm like, man, we ain't no way we're getting in here. McKinney walks up. They're like, who you with? He's like, all of them. Security's like, all right, make a line. We all just literally walked in, like, 40 of us.
Oh.
No issues. Just, whoop. I was like, wow. This is
so this
college
is
gonna be fun. Yeah, this is gonna be this is gonna be fun.
That's awesome. That's one of those times where you like you just kind of sit back and let it happen. You're like, I can't believe that just happened.
And you know, the interesting thing is that I didn't drink in college. So I would go to these clubs and stuff like that, and I, you know, you want to drink? I'm like, nah, just give me a bottle of water and stuff like that. So my friends loved it because I was always the DD.
Oh, yeah. True.
Yeah. So
you were valuable. Yeah.
Definitely valuable.
What are you doing in there? Without, I mean,
me?
Just watching the scenery, talking?
Talking to chicks. What am I supposed to do in a club? I don't need alcohol to say hello.
Yeah, there you go.
You're better off than probably the two of us.
Oh, man, listen. I always tell, you know, if you see something you like, the worst that can happen is a no, right? You ain't never going to see that person ever again.
That's
true. Might as well just say what's up. They say no, be like, nice meeting you. Keep it moving.
You'd be a good salesman.
I've done sales before. Sales is fun. I do enjoy sales, actually.
You got to be able to take a couple of no's if you're going to get into that.
Oh, no, you got to take a lot of no's.
Yeah.
A lot of doors slammed in your face. Put it that way.
Yep. I'm going to take this, Scott, because he's got the swag dripping all off of him. You know, like we're listening to him, and it's like, this guy's got it going on. You're drinking water bottles at the club and still picking up chicks. That's talent. Yeah. So I looked up a picture of you. You kicked in Nike Vapors, right?
I did, yeah. My last year I kicked in Nike the 3/4, and then my second or third year I kicked with the Lows, and they got rid of the Lows.
I saw that picture, and I was like, this guy's kicking with Nike Vapors? He's like, so Marquette King before Marquette King. Because
yeah, I didn't like soccer cleats.
With
they
some
were
swag.
Yeah, the soccer cleats were too narrow, right? And I made the mistake switching my freshman year because in high school I wore soccer cleats my first 2 years. Then I moved to the Nike Low, the Vapor football shoe, and it just to me was just so much more comfortable with a wider foot. So when we got to Miami, they didn't have it, so I wore the soccer cleat. Didn't have a great freshman year. Switched over cleats, had a better year, and that was just it was just more comfortable for me. And I hated, I'm not even gonna lie, I hated, you know, like that wear a soccer cleat, wear a football cleat. Like, nah, yeah. I can't do that. That just wasn't for me.
That was a silly look. I never quite understood the two different cleat style, though. I know people wore different size cleats sometimes.
Kickers let a tighter shoe on their kicking foot sometimes because they want to feel like a glove. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good. Maybe on field goals, but not punting.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I don't want to do this, but I do have to bring up what was one of the better memories of our childhood that has to be one of your worst memories on a football field, and that would be the 05 game on the on that snap. Can you just run through what that one was like? I promise we're going to give you a chance to talk about some better memories again after this, but I just have to wonder because, like, you're a guy that – like you're a punter, you're holding, you're out there, and then all of a sudden the kick never gets off because the snap doesn't go down. What happened from your viewpoint?
I mean, you know, it was a snap, didn't handle it well, didn't get it off. You know, probably the worst sporting experience I can say of my life. And you know, you're down on yourself obviously because you pretty much lost the game, and you know, you let your brothers down. But you know, having the team that I had that, you know, pick you up. You know, we're going to need you in the future and stuff like that. So don't hang your head and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, there's the only thing you can do is put it on yourself, lift your head up and answer the questions that you have to answer. It's going to suck. It's going to hurt for a long time. But it's good to have, you know, brothers around you there to, you know, lift you up, comfort you and stuff like that. But, yeah, it definitely it's a hard time to look back on. But, you know, you got to take onus of it. It happened. You move on.
When did you feel like you bounced back? Was there like a, you got back out there next game and you uncorked one and a punt, or you got that first hold down for a PAT or something? You're like, okay, you know what? Like, we're moving on. We're putting this behind us.
I think you always move on. I don't think you ever bounce back from it because it's always in the back of your mind that it happened in the biggest game, the biggest rivalry on the biggest stage. You just move on from it. You know, like you go to the next kick, the next hold, and you just keep it moving because, I mean, I'm thankful that I don't live in this day and age the way that social media is because see what happens to some of these young kids out there when they make a mistake and you just have fan bases that, you know, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to do this. And it's like, yo, the kid already feels worse than anything that you can say. And yeah. I get it. Your team lost. By the way, his team lost. The guy that's on the field right now, he feels worse than anybody because he let his team down. And I know it sucks for kids nowadays to go through that and stuff like that. But
Social media is a tough day and age to be a pro athlete because the microscope is already on you. If social media didn't exist, now everyone gets to kind of zoom in a little bit further with the microscope. So that makes it really tough. So you mentioned other players, like, let's say since you're a kicker, it's like a unwritten brotherhood. Do you feel for guys, let's say Florida State, for example, we had so many missed kicks against the Canes to where we lost that way in the past. And you mentioned the player must be heartbroken. I can only imagine how that feels. Is a little bit of you like sympathetic to that, even though it's a rival, or at that point you're like, hell yeah, we got him?
I mean, you look at it as a rival. It's not like I'm be like, oh no, he missed. No, but you feel for the individual for himself. Like, you've been there. You've been in those shoes. You know what's about to happen next for him. So as like a human, it sucks. You know, like, you feel for him just because you've been in that situation. But it's not like I'm going to say to a rival, like, oh, my God, he missed. No, like, I'm still going to go crazy. Still going to cheer and stuff like that because that's the competitor in you. That's the Cane in you. But you definitely feel for the person for them. And, like, nowadays when you watch, you know, sports like we just talked about, you're like, damn, this person's going to have to delete like their whole entire social media because there's nothing he can sign on that some stupid fan's not going to come out there and say, I'm going to kill your mom and stuff like that. And all these crazy things that they do say, you know, we literally were getting into like the Facebook age when this happened. And, you know, I got some messages and stuff like that. And I simply just put it, cool, I'll be here at this time at school. If you want to come say what's up and you want to kill me, come on through. Let's see what you got. And, of course, nobody says anything. Nobody shows up because they're keyboard warriors.
Yeah, right. All right, what, give us a good memory now. Like, what was the moment where you were playing and you were on top
Scott
of the
some
world?
Shit for asking that. Now you get to, I mean, now's your moment.
It's all good. I mean, you guys are Florida State guys, so you guys have to bring it up, right? It's your podcast, and I have no problem talking about it because I went through it. You hold yourself accountable, and you keep moving. I would say probably the craziest game, craziest feeling I probably was involved in was my freshman year, our second game, we're playing Florida in the OB at night, and we are down by like 21 or something like that at halftime. And this is the one where Devin Hester took the opening kickoff for the house.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
And then Brock Berlin in the second half came back, and we're literally just marching down the field, and we had to come back at night. It was absolutely berserk in the Orange Bowl. It was crazy. I'm like, okay, this is what Miami football is all about.
That was a club night, I'm sure, right?
Well, no, I was a freshman, really, and that was really like the second game. So it wasn't like I was like part of the team, the boys, like someone's going to hit me up like, hey, punter, come on out. Like, nah. We like as freshmen, yeah, we did our thing. But right. We didn't go with like the old heads to like South Beach. Nah, we stuck around the Grove and stuff like that. We did our thing.
The Orange Bowl, I feel like for a younger group, they don't remember what the significance of that stadium was. And there wasn't a whole lot of frills to it. I mean, it was just an old stadium kind of deal, but there was a special charm. Can you describe what it was like to play in that building when it was rocking?
Man, the Orange Bowl at night, there was no stadium better than that. The Orange Bowl at night, the mystique, the electricity, the fan base, how it was built. It was super old. Everybody knows that. But how it was built, the noise would literally be right on top of you. The fans were literally right on top of you. And it was just like, you're in the Orange Bowl at night. You see the skyline, the city of Miami in the background. The place is rocking. If it's a rivalry, there's fights going on in the fan bases. It is just something that you just can't describe. It's just one of those like feelings when you're in there, you're like, damn. Like, you know, played on this field before me. You know how many Super Bowls, how many national championships were played on this ground before I even stepped foot on here. It was definitely something special. And even though we played a lot of our rivalry games at 12 o'clock, a nighttime game, it was just something different.
Yeah, I feel like Miami football lost a little bit, right, when that stadium got torn down and they had to move. And it's already so hard to with it being kind of off campus and everything, to kind of generate that kind of fan support that you maybe get at those college, in those more college-type towns. But, yeah, there's just something – do you think that's like kind of held back Miami a little bit here over the last couple of years, not having like that place that really feels like home?
No. I mean, you know, people always say like, you guys don't even have your own campus. I'm like, we live in Coral Gables. Like for people that don't know what Coral Gables is, it is old school money. Yeah. When I tell you they make their own rules, there's not even street signs. They're rocks on the ground with the signs because they don't want street signs. You can't put your garbage out because they make you go inside and get your garbage. Like it's old school. The reason our basketball stadium isn't full capacity with seats because Coral Gables said no. So we'll never, ever, ever have an on-campus stadium. And first of all, we don't have anywhere to drive. There ain't no way 80,000 people coming down US 1 and Bird Ave to go to our campus. I'm just sorry. It's not going to happen.
That'd be a hell of a traffic jam.
But, you know, oh my goodness. US 1 already sucks down here.
Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is. But you know what? First going to, at the time, I think I forgot what the name of the stadium was, but before the renovations, it sucked. It was absolutely terrible. It just didn't feel like
a college
football.
I went to a Orange Bowl game when Florida State played Northern Illinois down there. I agree with you. It was just sterile. Like it was – there was no atmosphere. It was, really dry, if that's even a way to describe a stadium. But, of course, they put that awning up there, and I've been I went to a Dolphins game as they were building it. So I need to go back post-renovation because I'm sure that's awesome to have a little shade and everything like that. Also, maybe trap some of the noise.
Oh, it's got to be an improvement. A lot of noise, like a lot. Like I was totally shocked how much noise it actually changed the vibe and the atmosphere in that stadium. And I think from a fan perspective, it's an amazing stadium to have an experience because, you know, like unlike college campuses, a lot of them don't have alcohol. Like we have alcohol all over the stadium. And not even just like cocktails, beer, and you also have like margaritas and stuff like that. And all the different upgrades they did to the club level and the experience for the fans are amazing, in my opinion. And then you mentioned not having it on campus as a takeaway as far as fans going there. I would say the last 10 years, it has nothing to do with actually the fans getting there because of the distance. It happens to do with the play on the field, right? We all know if you're not good, a lot of times fans don't show up. And Miami has been very inconsistent. But if you go back to the 2017 season,
yeah,
that place, like that Notre Dame game, was, I'm telling you, that's the closest I've been to the OB at night when we played Notre Dame in 2017. That was, I tell everybody, that's the third loudest game that I've played in or been a fan in.
Man. Yeah, my father-in-law is a huge Notre Dame fan, bought tickets on Friday, drove down Saturday morning, and had to drive back that night after the game. It was him, his brother, who's a Canes fan, his other brother, who's a Notre Dame fan, and I'm sure the ride home was just dead quiet. I'll have to ask him, but he did say that it was really loud, and you could see on TV. I even said to myself, I was like, damn, maybe Miami is back. You know, like you hear that a lot. That's a phrase that gets – fan-wise overplayed, but a lot of times it's like, you know, that year, that defense, that turnover chain, that excitement, I was thinking that they were back. It was real for sure, and they were in the running until that Pitt game at the very end to be sneak into the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, that season was it was definitely fun being a fan and being at every game, stuff like that. And the turnover chain, I feel like, came out at the right season because, you know, starting the season 10-0, you know, if you started the season, I don't know, 3-3, that turnover chain doesn't mean squat because it's like, yeah, your team's not even good. Who cares? Like now you're making your way up the polls and stuff like that. And you know, at the end of the year, you look at it and you say, listen, we had some crazy comebacks, some crazy plays to keep this undefeated thing going. And then for me, we had some key injuries and it's part of football, but I felt like we had some key injuries that we couldn't recover from because we didn't have a talent at that position to recover from it. You know, losing a Christopher Herndon, the tight end that was really our only dynamic tight end that could really block and go out for routes, I think hurt a lot. Losing your number one receiver in Amon Richards, you know, dynamic guy that, you know, sadly his career is over now because of the neck injury.
Yeah.
And then you lost your number one running back in Mark Walton, which the running back doesn't hinder you as much because, you know, running backs are running backs, but to me, when people talk about injuries, I always mention Chris Herndon before I mention the other two, only because what we do in our offense with tight ends and actually helping inland and split out wide definitely hurt. But hey, listen.
It's really important, yeah.
That's football. Injuries happen. There's a reason why you get recruited like everybody else. Next man up. You got to step up. But the problem is you can tell, like, watching the Pitt game, watching the ACC game, you're like, yeah, they just don't got it. They need a lot more depth. Yeah, they need a lot more depth to be considered, like all like you said, the fans like to throw around, we're back. Yeah, we're back as soon as when you start consistently winning the Coastal, competing for an ACC, and being in the national talk. When you can consistently do that, I'll say it. But I ain't never going to say that. I got to wait until you actually can compete. Like if you came back in 2018 and did the same exact thing, I said, okay. Now you're making your way to say that we're back. But next year, flop.
Right. So currently, Manny Diaz, give me the local feel on it. What's everyone think about him? Because he's a hell of a recruiter. He had a lot of excitement going into next season. And then obviously the season didn't play out so well. New offensive coordinator this year. What's the feel? What's the expectation? And what do you personally think about him?
I mean, obviously, the expectation going into any season, everyone's like, oh, we're going to go this, we're going to go that, right? That's everybody's expectation, right? But I got to look at it as, you know, objectively and look at what Manny Diaz did his first year. Didn't work out well. it could honestly been a lot different if it was a better kicker and they didn't make some mental mistakes. That's literally just facts. They could have probably won two or three more games just from a kicker. So I look at that and say, cool, you made your mistakes as a first-year coach. But the one thing I have to give Manny Diaz a lot of respect for that the two previous coaching regimes didn't do is that he saw something that wasn't working, and which was his offense, and he changed the whole entire thing. He scrapped it. He finally went out and got a spread offense coach. He went and got a new wide receivers coach, tight ends coach, and offensive line coach and said, you know what? It didn't work, so I'm going to go ahead and change it, which a lot of coaches don't do after year one. So I give him a lot of respect saying, hey, let me do something a lot of these South Florida kids love to play in, and that's a spread, open offense, get the ball in their hands, let them make some moves. So for me, that's the one thing that I give respect for Manny Diaz. He is a good recruiter, like you said. Their defense has always been good under him since he's been at Miami.
Yep.
And I will sit back and see what they do with this new offensive staff. You know, they brought in De'Aaron King, who I think can be a fun, dynamic quarterback that runs this system very well. That's one that gives me hope. If we didn't have him as a quarterback for this year, I wouldn't have as much hope. But if you look at him, what he did with Houston, what he's able to do on the football field, you're like, damn, that's an exciting dude. He's electric. He can run. He can make people miss. He can make all the throws. So I, with him there, they have a shot of being a really good offense. Can I say they could be special? No, because I don't know what they're going to do up front. We all know college football is won on the line of scrimmage, and downright we were putrid last year of offensive linemen. So with the spread offense, it helps you if your offensive line is bad. Get the ball out of the hands quick so I don't have to stay engaged so much. You bring in a new O-line coach, we'll see. That's what I tell everybody when it comes to the Miami season for me. We'll see. If those boys up front can hold their own, you can see like a good season.
We'll see. It feels like that has been the mantra of, or at least should be the mantra of Miami fans. Probably all the state of Florida team fans for the next couple of years until somebody actually does break through and show some signs of being a national contender again. And boy, hopefully we get back to the days where the big three are three of the best teams in the country again, because I think that would be a lot of fun to see here sooner rather than later. Brian Monroe, thanks so much for joining us here tonight on the Sports Bar Podcast. It was fun catching up with you, bending your ear a little bit, getting some fun stories, and certainly hope that maybe somewhere down the line we can catch up again.
Yeah, for sure, man. No problem, guys. Enjoy your beer. Enjoy your
that's right.
Your social distancing. Stay safe. Hope all the family and stuff are safe up there, and continue doing your stuff, guys.
We appreciate that. And before we let you go, yes or no, are we playing college football this year?
Yes.
All right. That's it.
We might not be in the stadium for it, but we're definitely going to have college football.
That's all what right. I like to hear.
All we needed to hear.
I don't know what I would do if we didn't have college football, honestly. I might go crazy.
I'm with you there.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
Thanks again to Brian Monroe. Fun interview. I mean, Alex, it was, like we said at the top, one that got away because we couldn't stop coming up with the follow-up questions, and he kept telling us good stories, and it could have gone all night long.
Yeah. I mean, good thing I didn't tell him initially that we were Knowles or we might not ever had him on. We had to surprise him with that one as opposed to telling him we were Canes, which
he was
think
a good sport
just,
about it.
I think he just assumed that, so we kind of snaked him into it. But you know what? Soon, Scott, I think we're going to have to upgrade from our beers, hopefully have him on again, drink a little Crown Royal XR with him.
Ooh,
I looked
it up.
That's
a pro move.
I looked it up after he sent it to us, $140 a bottle. I think I'm going to start gambling bottles of whiskey. That's a lot smarter than me. You know, I could go drink it with the guy, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It was fun. We hope to have some more interviews like this in the hopper coming up the rest of the summer. Even though sports are on the way to resuming, it is still, generally speaking, a quieter time of the year. And before football, which this podcast makes its hay, we want to keep trying to bring on some football-related guests for you and have some fun with that. But Alex, we mentioned it. We're going to get into it in more detail, certainly over the course of the upcoming weeks, because we have some solidity to some plans, and we will have time to break down what the NBA coming back looks like and the NHL coming back and hopefully Major League Baseball coming back looks like. But we do at least have a little more solid plans, I guess you could say, in place
dates.
As far as what this looks
we
like.
We got dates.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing, is it not? To have a date?
Wait, what'd you say?
That's the biggest thing, right?
Yes.
To sit there and circle something on a calendar.
Exactly. And also, you know, we have wanted all of these back. Now they're all coming back with a little bit of delay. They're going to overlap, and we're going to be, for as rough as this late spring, early summer have been, we're going to have like Christmas in September with a lot of these overlapping sports. You know, we're going to have NBA playoffs with this whole new tournament style. Same thing with the NHL, and then football kicking off. I mean, college football just had a couple positive tests here recently at Alabama, at Oklahoma State, and we're chugging on. They're gonna quarantine those guys, try and nip it in the bud before things get spread among too many players, and we're going to keep it going.
Yeah, the risk of don't want to veer off into that track, but it will be interesting to see over the course of the next couple of weeks how these plans being implemented, how these colleges kind of handle things, because that's going to speak a lot for not just football, but for all of these sports going forward, basketball and baseball and some of the more fringe sports. Football and basketball are, I mean, they're being used as guinea pigs, honestly, right now for the collegiate sports models. If they can come back, if they can start working out, if things can go all right, then that's really going to open up the door for everything else to kind of return. But are you concerned at all about like ODing on sports in October with the amount that might be going on at that point in time?
No, I'm so desperate right now. I would OD tomorrow if they'd let me. Just let me die in my sports heaven. No, I don't know if I'll be able to record them all, but I definitely will do what I did mid-college football season, bring two TVs out.
Multi-screen.
Exactly. That's the key. I mean, if you're comfortable going to a sports bar, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for a good sports bar day. You know, get a couple pictures, get you a booth, wear a diaper. funny story, actually, about that. So our good friend and new listener, Joseph, and I'm holding him to that because obviously this isn't released. I don't know if he's going to listen. He said he was going to listen for the first time because he was excited about the Brian Monroe interview. Kind of gave him a little sneak peek on that and some of the highlights. But he's in my fantasy football league. You in the past were in my fantasy football league. We like to do some fun bets along the way. So my buddies this year, the loser has to wear a diaper and go to a sports bar. And we all sit around and drink. And I freaking lost. So I'm gonna.
Oh, no, so you had to do it.
I have to do it, and
let me know what date. I want to go out with you to that.
No. Oh man, there haven't been sports on, so I don't see. I'm not excited about that, obviously at all. But it is going to be pretty funny for them to, you know, I'm obviously not going to tell them when I pee, but because I can't give them the satisfaction. I'm just gonna act like I never went. But how
miserable
dark
pants is that day, man. Are you going to borrow one of Beckett's? Like, what are you doing here?
I don't know. Is it Depends, the old trusty brand in adult diapers?
I don't think you can buy a single. Like, what are you going to do? Buy a whole pack?
Good point. I don't even know. Maybe I'll try and squeeze my
Can I just get
sons.
One?
Yeah.
You go, you know, Publix, you can go and you can, like, bring them the meat and be like, hey, can you cut this package? I don't need all these. Like, you go to the front, the customer service counter with the Depends bag and you're just like, hey, can we cut this package? I only need one.
I don't even want to talk about it. I honestly haven't even thought about purchasing him. That's going to be embarrassing enough.
Just take one of Beckett's, man. You'll end up with diaper butt, but who? Whatever.
I don't. Yeah, that'd be quite the squeeze. Then I'd be double whammy, and I'd basically be in a Speedo that's two sizes too small.
That might keep everything in. You might not have to pee. That could be a good. Could be a good strategy.
You're right. Just cut off circulation. That's probably the safest way to do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I got us there, but long story short, yeah. I'm excited for sports to be back. And no, I have absolutely no issue with an overload of sports. I mean, tell me you're not worried about that problem.
Oh, I'm not worried about it per se. I'm just like, where are we going to find the time, right? That's where the issue comes in. We went from potentially being, and then, listen, this is not me complaining. This is just me making an observation here. I mean, we went from a period of time where we're like, can we watch anything, to a point in time where I don't even know how many, like, you have to go to a sports bar in order to watch. I mean, you're going to have NFL, you're going to have college football, you're going to have potentially Major League Baseball playoffs if they get things rectified. You'll have the NBA playoffs.
NBA playoffs, yep.
You'll have golf. I mean, we'll have so much going on all at once in what is already usually an overflow, overpacked
it's
month
always
in
busy.
A good way, but it will be fascinating to see. Obviously, we got plenty of time before we have to worry about that. We'll just keep easing our way back in over the course of the next couple of weeks as we keep getting plans locked in. And in the meantime, I'll keep enjoying my NASCAR and a little bit of Bundesliga on Saturdays, and look forward to when hopefully the rest of these regular ones are getting going. How much faith do you have in baseball before we wrap this thing up?
You know, the proposed plan, obviously we're trying to wrap, so I'm not going to go into their proposed plan, but it doesn't seem like this one's going to get passed either. They're doing a percentage-based pay. If there's no playoffs, you don't get paid. If there are, you get more. It's just ridiculous. And right now, if you look at the numbers from what I've read of the owners not paying their – I mean, based on the proportion of their money and their income – how much they're losing, and then the potential of not having any stream of income coming in. I don't know why they wouldn't be a little bit more willing to work with the players, is my perspective. It's like, you guys are arguing over a couple million dollars when you're billionaires and you're going to have zero stream of revenue compared to a portion. And I'm speaking to the owners in that scenario.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, at the end of the day, it's billionaires fighting with millionaires. So the common person is going to have a hard time finding some common ground there. But largely, I'm siding with the players, just because it's like you said, like, billionaires have billions of dollars. They're in this with for the long haul. Like, they're not going to stop owning they're not going to have like a hurt their elbow and all of a sudden they can't own the team anymore. You know?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to own the team until probably they die. And then that'll be passed down to their family or whatever. Like, they're going to be fine regardless, but you figure if they're arguing this much over dollars and cents, you'd find a way to go ahead and make at least some dollars and cents at the end of the day.
That's the bottom line right there. That's exactly right. You need something coming in. And what also blows my mind is I way back when, it seems like forever ago now, but I mean, a month or 2 months or 3 months, I guess it was probably 3 months ago, I fixed baseball. Came up with a whole idea right outside of spring training. And obviously that all got cut short. But they had such a grand opportunity.
That's the big
thing. On this.
That's the biggest thing.
And make it work. Get the product on the field. Make money. You're the only one that could have done it because your season made sense timing-wise, and they couldn't figure it out. And now they're still fighting. If they wait until basketball, hockey, football, golf are all going on, and they try and squeeze themselves in there, it's not going to have quite the same footprint that it would have.
No, and from what I read today, it basically seems like whatever they have to agree upon, they basically have to the end of the month. Because they have to agree upon something and then get the season started by, at the latest, probably mid-July.
A lot of people were saying way back when that they expected MLB, the whole plan the whole time is July 4th. And I think that probably had some truth to it. And I think a lot of the upper management, mainly the owners and the players union, were thinking that date. So they're like, we got plenty of time. We not till July 4th. Well, guess what? We're a month out, and y'all couldn't be further from an agreement. Yeah. It's too late now. Now you're looking, like you said, late July. And even then, the boat's already leaving the port, man. They're playing catch-up now. They should have had their ass in gear way before this to make some money.
Exactly. Well, while Major League Baseball is struggling to figure life out, the minor league team here in town, they're finding ways to make some money, man. You see, they're bringing Thirsty Thursdays back just without games. So you can, yeah, you can buy a $2 ticket, go into the stadium, enjoy drink specials, food specials, and hang out at the Budweiser Tiki Terrace out in left field.
Are they playing something on the Jumbotron or what?
I didn't notice whether or not they're going to do that. I don't think you can see the Jumbotron from there, so probably not. But I think they'll be playing music or whatever. It's basically just going to be an outdoor bar.
Okay.
Which is more or less what Thirsty Thursdays are anyway, right? It's just a giant outdoor bar.
That's all it is. That's what baseball is in general.
Yeah. So,
you know, whether it's a Thursday or not, you go out, you hang out, you drink some beers.
It's all the same. It's just there's no baseball being played. So,
yeah.
And could be a bad foreshadowing or just a great way for the local team to make money. I tell you what, they're smart guys.
Innovative.
They are innovative. They are innovative down there. I give them a lot of credit for that. But with that, we look forward to next week, kind of getting back onto the regular schedule, regular show. We don't have any guests lined up as of yet, unless some punter slides into our DMs, I guess, and wants to join us for next week's show. But we have
that punter charm.
Yeah,
I know. Punter, former kicker charm.
But we do want to get back into kind of breaking some things down. We will get back into quarantine drafts. We'll do, even though quarantine's over, because we're just still having fun with those. We got a few other topics we got lined up we want to knock out before we finish them up. But we want to thank everybody that is that stuck with us here through all of this. We're approaching our 50th show. We're approaching our 1 year anniversary here on the Sports Bar Podcast. So we just ask that you guys continue to enjoy. If you feel like rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts, that always is a nice touch. And give us a follow, like, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and tell your friends if you know they like podcasts and they like sports and banter and two guys that drink beers and have a good time, right?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, hopefully we get some Canes followers this week with old Brian Monroe, and looking forward to hearing some feedback as we always receive from just a regular show. But I mean, I really enjoyed this one. I think we got a lot out of it, had a lot of fun with it too. So I'm excited to talk about that with our listeners, open dialogue, whether it's individual texts like that's probably our main way of communicating with our listeners. We know most of them. They're texting us, but we always enjoy an open forum on Twitter as well. So Facebook, you know, Scott always puts them out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it, Google Play. You can find us anywhere. Throw us 5 stars and go ahead and share it with a buddy or two and let them know. Give us a shot.
Well, it felt good to
drink a beer.
Yeah, exactly. Felt good to knock the rust off a little bit here tonight. For Alex, I'm Scott. This has been another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.